It's Stephen Lucky, it's Black Voices, and I'm here at West Yorkshire Playhouse with Corina Johnson. Born in August the 25th, 1972, she became Britain's only black female theatrical programmer and the first and only black artistic director of a regional theatre. But before all of that, let's go back in time and ask you, how did you get into British theatre in the first place?
That's a really good question. I was one of those annoying children that always wanted to be in the arts, to be honest. I danced, I was training to be a dancer, had a really bad injury, and then that's why I kind of refocused. I always wanted to be in drama, but actually I would say my first experience of being involved in it rather than being a viewer, because I was very lucky that I saw a lot of theatre as I was growing up, was through Oval House. As a youngster, they had a youth arts programme, which was very, very extensive at the time. It's much, much reduced now. And they were amazing because they allowed us to have a huge amount of access to the stage and opportunities to do our work and our ideas on that. So I did a lot of that. And then I went off to university. And I never really envisaged myself doing anything other than working in theatre, to be honest. So, and then of course when I graduated, my mission was just to get a job in theatre somewhere doing anything. I didn't mind, and I ended up being front of house manager.
Yeah, you studied at Leicester University. What did you study?
I did a combined degree, which was in drama and psychology, was my minor.
And then you went on to set up a theatre company called Cushite Theatre, and you did that in relationship with a good friend of yours called Wayne Buchanan. Can you tell us about how you set the company up and what were your successes?
Cushite Theatre Company started in 1998. We had our first production in 1998. It was actually set up originally with Wayne Buchanan and a number of his contemporaries who were actors, black actors who were all quite popular in the 80s at the time, and wanted to make more demanding work. And I came along to work with him on his first play, so I was working on it with him as a dramaturg, really. And then, you know, by fluke and madness, really, I ended up directing that, because it was originally meant to be directed by somebody else. I said, then he asked me to do that, and that's how the working relationship started. So originally as a dramaturg and then directing that piece. And what was really clear is when the production was actually going to happen, lots of people who had spent lots of time having meetings but not actually doing anything got really scared, and I think that happens sometimes, and so it ended up just being the two of us that put that show on. And that our first show together was Vengeance. That was the very first piece, and that was on at Oval House, in the theatre upstairs, and it was phenomenal.
That toured, didn't it?
It did after that, which was really lucky. So it went to three other venues. It went to Nottingham Playhouse when they were doing a little season in a studio theatre in town. Can't remember where else it went, but it went to three venues basically. It did like a week on the road, which was our first experience of touring. So that was all. It was really exciting, and we did it on, you know, on a wing and a prayer and no money and all of that stuff. But actually, that's exactly what everybody has to do. You know, you have to start somewhere, and it was really exciting. And what was clear is that the combination of the two of us together, what he wanted to say, and I guess the way I had facilitated his voice when he was writing and also obviously when directing, meant that it was just a really powerful combination, and people were really really enthusiastic about it. And it was kind of, you know, we expected it to be good, but we really weren't in expecting that level of enthusiasm.
Well, we'll come back to Cushite, because a lot of things were happening in your life at that time, and you became the associate director at Theatre Royal Stratford East. What was that like?
That was great, actually. I became associate there because I was on an Arts Council fellowship program, which was around, it was sort of ran like an MBA model about leadership, and they'd chosen I think 10 of us to be in all sorts of venues all over the country. I was in Nottingham. I had a bit of kind of madness happening personal in my at home, so I needed to come back to London, and I knew Philip vaguely at the time, so I just went and spoke to Philip Headley and said, look, I really want to continue this program, but I want to do it, I need to do it in London, and I'd really like to do it here. Can I finish my work here? And he was absolutely fine with that and said, yes, really, we want to. I mean, I think it probably allowed him to thumb his nose a little bit that they weren't in the program originally. And I was there for about 9 months. So actually, my program had finished after about four, and then they asked me to continue working there. So I did.
Yeah, because I can remember that I think you had a slight topsy-turvy time while you were in Nottingham, but you did turn that round, didn't you, when you came to London?
Yeah, I mean, I think being in London, I think being at Stratford East that didn't need to have a tokenistic attitude to having a black member of staff. And part of the problem with the fellowship programme, although I think that the inspiration is a very good idea, but I think part of the problem was that what it did is created very token situations for all of those people who were, you know, who were very high achieving, very experienced people who were in places where the institution didn't really want them to be there.
Another important venue for black practitioners is the Oval House Theatre in London. I know quite a bit about that place. And in 1999, you took over the programming from the dynamic Paul Everett. I remember he turned the programming upside down there and had a huge success. Did you find that a hard act to follow?
Not really, because I think that I have an awful lot of respect for Paul Everett, actually, and I think that we had lots of similar ideas about what was needed, and because I'd been around Oval House while he was there, and as a practitioner, and also I'd worked there a bit, it was I'd seen what he'd been trying to do, and I had obviously my own ideas and things that I wanted to change and improve on. And I think that what his time there did for me was gave a really great foundation, and had already shaken up the building to start thinking more artistically after a long time of not doing that. Although Oval House's history is much longer than that and has been amazingly artistic, but I think it had been a bit of a slump before Paul.
I couldn't agree with you more. I remember me as a young artist under your wing. I think I just had a tour of Junior Story, and you said to me, oh God, how long have you been here, Stephen? I said, well, quite a few years, and obviously I felt very comfortable. And you said, well, don't you think it's about time you left? Do you remember why you said that to me?
I do. You make it sound like it's such an awful thing, but actually it was meant with love. No, because I felt that, you know, I was very clear that what I wanted to do at Oval House was that it was a place for people at the beginnings of their career, and absolutely to support people at that point. But that if Oval House was to have a bigger impact on the theatre in general, then those people needed to go on and out of Oval House and start making work elsewhere in order to make that kind of knock-on and reflecting that way. And so I was just trying to help you, like a lovely mother hen that I am. I was trying to help you out the door, with knowing that there was love at home, but that you could go on and be out there and do it in the real world.
And you did help me, and I did move on, and interesting things happened to me. But anyway, it's not about me, it's about you. Let's talk about you as a programmer. I'm going to quote something I found on the internet here. It's about Johnson's vision to program a broad spectrum of black British productions stems from her frustration at plays that are either totally escapism, where we sing, dance and be funny, or the other extreme, dramas about police brutality. Somewhere in between, that is the place that most of us live. That's what I want to see reflected. What did you mean by that? And can you give us some examples of your programming?
Okay, what I meant by that is that I wanted to make work that was just didn't fit into those two categories, you know, because I think I was programming a broad spectrum of work, and not only black work, for a broad spectrum of audience. And obviously, as a black practitioner, I wanted to, particularly with black work, to challenge what was already out there. And I think that's the job of any venue that's about new writing, actually, is to challenge what's out there and to push the genre, or you know, push that area of work further. So you know, it's not that I will never ever see a piece of work that has singing and dancing in it or funny, and I've done that, and it's not that I will ever not ever do any kind of work that has issues in it, and I've definitely done that too. But I think that there is space for work that is in between that, and I have programmed lots of work which I see some things there. So I've programmed lots of work which is a real broad range. So obviously Early Morning Depot, which is about, you know, a coup by some Nigerian office cleaners, which is brilliant because actually, you know, it talks about politics here, it talks about politics in Nigeria, all through this fantastic satirical style. There was Troy Fairclough's You Don't Kiss, which was ages ago, but again, that was about a kind of fairy tale gay black male love story, really. And I'd say that the piece of work that I made most recently before this, Sweet Yam Kisses, was like that as well, because it was about love, actually. And I just lots and lots of documentary interviews with a number of couples, ordinary couples, about their life, their love, and how they knew each other were the one, because clearly we want to talk about that too. So the issue was love, but it wasn't treated like an issue, which I think was kind of interesting.
Okay. At the end of 2005, you temporarily took over from John McGrath at Contact Theatre, Manchester, and became the first black female director of a regional theatre. Can you describe the experience and what it was like for you? What did it mean to you?
Going to Contact was an amazing opportunity, and when the when it came up, it was right for me at that point in my career. I was ready to leave Oval House and to have a bigger challenge. I definitely knew that I wanted to run a building at some point, and this would give me the opportunity to do that at a larger scale, and I definitely was interested in doing a producing building. But Contact is a really special building in terms of its remit, and so it made sense for me to go there, because actually there was a lot of sympathy for its ethos from me in terms of just the things that I'm interested in, and there were lots of similarities in its ethos around emerging artists that there was at Oval House. So it was a very good fit, and it was really lucky for both of us, actually. I think, you know, John was lucky to find me, to have that time at that point, and to have the kind of experiences I already had to bring to that job, and it was great for me to go, can I how comfortable do I feel heading an organisation of this scale? And what it taught me was that I was, actually. And you know, there's those moments when you're doing stuff and you're taking in lots and lots of information, because obviously it's a handover, so he's kind of giving me lots of information about where we're at, what's happening here, what's happening in this department, etc. And then, you know, I'm there on my own for a couple of weeks, and somebody comes in the office and they ask me a question, and I answer it immediately because I know, and I don't have to go, oh, let me just check that in this file or whatever. So there's a point at which there's a fit, and you think, actually, I do know what I'm doing, and that's okay, and you kind of breathe out.
Absolutely. I mean, I agree with you. I remember visiting there myself and seeing you operate, and you seemed incredibly relaxed. And I have to say, again, another hard act to follow, one which you seem to fit in just ever so easily.
I don't know. Maybe there's something about following particular lovely men, actually. What can I say? I think that in any successful operation, it means that you're going to have to follow someone who's been really good at it, and I think that's not a bad thing, because I think that all that does is give you a great foundation, and it means that that you meet a staff team that's enthusiastic and excited already, so therefore things that you want to explore or push or change, they're going to be up for it. And that's, having a motivated workforce is absolutely what makes makes your job possible.
And they've got some really good staff there. I mean, Cheryl, who's the Associate Director for New Writing, she's incredibly enthusiastic. And she's won a few awards. I think she won an award in her first year. And John Morgan, I think he's just about to leave.
Yes. Yeah, they were amazing. Cheryl had just started when I came. In fact, she was interviewed, I think, at the same time as me, because there was an idea of those two jobs being combined, but it was absolutely the right decision to go this way around. So Cheryl has started, and in fact, at the beginning of her working life, had spent more time being managed by me than by John because of the nature of the changing over. And John Morgan was amazing. I think it would have not been possible had he not been so so together and so open about having, you know, a new colleague for 4 month blocks of time, and being really supportive. And actually, I think we made a really good team. We had quite complementary skills, and I loved working with him, actually.
Mm. Yeah, but now hang on, just a second. If you were the only black theatre programmer in the UK, and up until just a year ago, the first black artist director of a regional theatre, what's going on? Because I can remember when I was given the Eclipse job as the Eclipse producer and worked at Nottingham Playhouse. That's 5 years ago. I was on News at 10 with Cully Tiari, who was then the first Asian artistic director in the country. Now, you know, not a lot has happened in the last 5 years. So, you know, what the question I want to ask you is, has the Arts Council, TMA and SALT Eclipse report, which looked at institutionalised racism in Britain, has it really made a difference?
I think, firstly, I really should correct that I was not the only theatre programmer and black theatre programmer in the country, because that would be to kind of diss my colleagues who are doing it and who have been doing it for a while, like Garfield and Euton Daly.
But in regional theatre, we're talking about regional theatre. These are the big theatres. You were and have been the only black female.
Yeah.
And that's true.
Yeah. That is definitely true. I think has the Eclipse report and made a difference? I remember being at that first conversation that spawned the Eclipse report, and feeling quite down, actually, at the time, because people were having debates which I just thought were really reductive and not interesting, and I didn't feel marginal, although I was being marginalised. So do I feel like it's made a difference? Well, the landscape hasn't changed, so I think the proof is in what you can see. And if one of the aims of it was to change the landscape of British theatre to include more diverse voices and faces, then it hasn't changed significantly enough, is what I would say. Some changes must have happened, I would hope, but it hasn't changed significantly enough.
Obviously, that report took into consideration a lot of things, but one of the things that it did emphasise was that at the top end, in terms of management and board members, there should be more ethnic minorities like yourself. All I'm saying is that if we go back 5 years, Cully was running a regional theatre, she doesn't now, and now 5 years later, you as a black woman are the only, you know, person in that capacity within the country. Something is not right.
I think clearly it is. You know, part of the reason I would say that I was at Contact is because they have, the chair of the board is a black man. And I'm not saying that he employed me because he's black, because clearly he employed John McGrath, who is not. But I think that their board is a brilliant, brilliant blueprint for what boards should look like, really, because they should reflect the place that they're in, reflect the city that they're in. And so there wasn't, you know, he's an incredibly brave man and doesn't, yeah, and just does and takes risks or doesn't see certain decisions as being risky that other chairs probably would. So what's going wrong? it's, you know, it's years and years of the same landscape being here, and how do you change that is going to take a much bigger shake-up than a piece of paper that sits on lots of people's shelves.
I mean, one of the things I was really impressed about when I was at Manchester Content for the first time, they've got a young person on the board.
Yes, we managed to recruit, because that happened when I was there. We finally managed to recruit a young person to be on the board, which is brilliant. That's fantastic. So, you know, there's a 21-year-old woman who had been involved in some of the activities at Contact, and who had stopped being involved in that now because her work had taken her away, but really, really was enthusiastic about it. And she was my boss, and I thought it was fantastic, because what she did is she had, you know, she... her opinions were valid and important, and you know, if it was a theatre for young people, and not to have that represented on the board, then there's something wrong. So I think I thought that was great, and you know, and totally necessary. And actually, I think that a lot of places could benefit from having young people around and their opinions heard much more often.
Okay. Well, let's move on, and let's have a quick chat about, do you remember Tullowa, when they almost imploded 2 years ago, when the Arts Council withdrew £4 million of funding for their theatre in Westminster in London, and the money was then earmarked for the Arts Council sustained theatre development for Black and Asian theatres over, they say, for the next 10 years? I mean, what do you think about the outcome of the report, and do you think that will make a difference?
I thought the report actually was amazingly readable for an Arts Council report. That first thing I would say, I thought that, you know, it made recommendations that now have gone through lots and lots of different panels and talking and talking and talking. One of the panels which I was on, which was talking and talking and talking. And I think for me, my frustration always is that there's not enough action, and there's way too much talking about stuff. And the talking costs money. I do think that the conclusions about having a number of spaces in the country that are producing, developing, nurturing Black artists is a good idea. I think having one theatre that has a programme of all Black work is not necessarily the right way. I think my leaning is much more towards something that is about developing work that goes into other buildings, rather than having a one flagship dedicated Black space, because I think that we're part of the whole, and we need to remain part of the whole. And I think that it might it will allow people to get off the hook if there's a one space, one stop shop.
And what are your feelings about the recent government proposal to cut the grants for the arts by 35%? The grants for the arts is that's the money that's put aside for artists and companies, individual artists and companies, so they can get grants from the Arts Council to fund their productions and projects. What do you think about that?
I think that's terrible. I mean, you know, we all knew that it was coming, but obviously the impact on emerging artists, no matter what their racial background is going to be immense, because grants for the arts is the way that people first get their foot on the rung, and if there's less of that money, then less of those projects will be funded. To do unique, amazing flagship stuff has also come through grants for the arts, so By lobbing off money off that particular fund, it's going to have a big impact for new people coming into theatre, so new voices, and also for a lot of artists who we like to think of as being really established already, who don't have regular funding and actually have to go through grants for the arts. So those projects will have an impact on that. So I think it's a real tragedy, because the event, you know, advent of that fund has made an awful lot of work happen over the last few years that would not have happened had it not been there. So I think it's a tragedy, really, and I hope that all the campaigning that obviously a lot of us in the arts are doing has some impact, and maybe some of that decision will be reversed.
Well, it hasn't happened yet, but the suggestion is that the money would then be diverted, or this is what's being implied, to 2010 for the Olympic Games.
Yeah. Now, I can't really diss all my sports colleagues, because obviously, you know, they have exactly the same argument, that they need investment if you want good British athletes.
And a lot of them are Black.
and a lot of them are black, and they, you know, we need that too. The reality is, you know, the cake is so big and it needs to be cut up different ways, but I think that we should never underestimate the impact and necessity of the arts. So what I guess I would say is that we need to be able to do both. In some way, there has to be a way to do both.
I mean, if you actually look back at the Boyden Report, I can't remember if it was 1999, and then the Arts Council Theatre Review, and it kept on saying over and over and over again, cultural diversity is right at the top. Now, of course, if you're going to cut 35% of grants for the arts, which, you know, could be money available for black practitioners, it will obviously have an effect on them, not just them, but also the wider theatre establishment as well.
Yeah, it will have an impact on them. I don't know how you ring fence that, because, you know, if there are cuts to be made, how, you know, whichever way you cut, somebody's going to be upset and someone's going to lose out. You could choose to cut in different ways, though.
Okay. Well, we know that you are passionate about new writing, and tonight, as I said, I'm here at West Yorkshire Playhouse, and you're opening a new play by a new writer. Can you tell us about the play Safe and the writer David Hermenstein?
Yes, I can. The play is about... it's about the consequences after a young man gets shot and murdered, and obviously... with the current spate of killings of young black men, it makes it even more poignant. And but the thing that is really exciting for me about this piece is actually it's from the perspective of those that are left behind, and actually mostly from the perspective of a young woman who's left behind, and not about glamorizing, glorifying the shooting and the sexiness of guns and gun crime. So I think it's an interesting spin. I think structurally it's a really, as a writer, David has kind of given us a really very filmic structure, which has been a really interesting challenge as a director to play with and kind of go, how much can you push that? But also equally theatrical. So it's very heightened language. It's kind of, it's sort of ultra realism in a way. So it's, I think it's really poetic and it's heightened, so it really does a theatrical thing which it wouldn't do in film, but its structure feels very filmic. So it's a really I think it's a really exciting piece, and we opened yesterday pressing tonight, and the response from people who actually that reflects their life tragedies was really, really positive. So I feel really honoured to do that.
I mean, this is absolutely fantastic for the writer, because I know the writer, and I remember seeing his first play, Caribbean Abroad, many years ago. I think it was at the Library Theatre in Manchester. And I think this is only his second theatre piece, and he's been through an incredible learning curve, and I know that you have been supporting that, along with West Yorkshire Playhouse. But for him to have his second play in the Courtyard, in, you know, what could be considered Britain's biggest regional theatre, is fantastic.
It is a great opportunity for David, and I think he's very, very aware of that, being around an awful lot of well-seasoned practitioners. And, you know, the West Yorkshire Playhouse really clearly wanted it to happen and really supported it. And he worked with me, and he also worked with Gabriel Gadamozzi as dramaturg, which was an amazing combination. I think possibly quite challenging for David, but actually to make that transition into this space and to work and to have work that's of a really good quality, you have to be challenged and pushed. And I think that what he's come up with is a really exciting piece of theatre.
Okay. That's fantastic. And what about you? Where does the future lie for you?
Where does the future lie for me? I'm really excited by coming back to being a practitioner more now and not running a building for a bit, because it takes over your life in a really different way. I definitely know that I want to run a building in the future, not too distant future, but I also am really clear that I want to practice more. And I want to get back to being will not get back to me. I want to work as an artist and not only as a black artist, because actually I feel that that's very reductive as well, that I get to only talk about race and not really much about the art. And the art is what made me come into this profession. So at the moment, it's really about doing as much art as possible, and I'm collaborating with some really exciting people, working lots with artists from very different art forms, which I'm finding really exciting, working internationally, which again is exciting because it's about being a British artist, not necessarily about being a black artist only. So I'm looking forward to making space for myself as an artist and also getting back to running a building at some point and making opportunities for other artists.
Is there any particular building you've got your eye on?
I'm not saying anything. My lips are sealed.
But you're way ahead of the field. I mean, seriously, if you think about the nature of British theatre and regional theatre and who runs it, you are way ahead of the field. So you say that, yes, you want to go back into regional theatre. Isn't it the case that you could actually just walk back into to regional theatre when you feel like it? Because actually, if you look at your CV, it's fairly impressive.
I would love that that were true. I would love that that were true. But I think that the reality is the landscape has not changed enough for that to happen yet. Yes, my CV is impressive. And had I been white and just done the things that I've just done, I wonder what kind of job offers I would have had. You can't predict that because you don't know. Nobody can know. But I think I don't know that the landscape has changed that much. I think that it was a unique set of circumstances that has allowed me to do what I'm doing, as well as obviously my own talent. I'm not going to say that I haven't got any. So I don't know. I think it's very interesting that you think that. I'm not sure I believe that myself.
Why don't you believe that?
Because you know, I'm here and I'm in my life, and so it's interesting what gets offered to you, what conversations happen after being very visible in that way and running contact. And they are different questions and they are different offers than maybe you'd expect or necessarily even want.
So are you saying that you did have expectations?
No, I think I was really clear that I knew that I wanted to get back to being a practitioner. I knew that when I went into contact, so it was a great transitional moment for me to go, yes, I definitely want to run a building. I definitely have loads more to give to young artists coming up. And what it made me do is think really clearly, really focus on what it was that I wanted to do next. And I do definitely want to run a building. And there are a few jobs, of course, that I kind of think, if in an ideal world, I'd like to do that and that. You know, I haven't got people beating down my door and going, here you are, would you like this job? It doesn't work like that. It really doesn't work like that. For anyone.
Why doesn't it work like that?
Don't try and push it. because we're working in an industry that is still very much, you know, for all the equal opportunities campaigning and policies and everything, it still is very much a closed shop that people get jobs. It's very clear who's going to make a particular leap at a particular time. So I don't feel like there are a very unexpected appointments happening at the moment. I think what's amazing that's happening at the moment is the amount of women that are going into those positions as artistic directors around the country, and that's a huge impact. And they're younger women. I think that's amazing. It still hasn't happened on race yet. And I hope that the time will come, but we need more. We need more of those pioneering and fearless chairs who don't see race as a risk. And at the moment, I'm not sure. I'm not sure whether the landscape has changed enough. I don't think. I hope it will. I hope it will. But, you know, I don't want to be alone doing that. I don't want to be the one and only. You know, it's about the landscape changing as a whole. And I don't
Well, trust it. Trust it. Saved by the Bell. You're not going just yet. I've only got a couple more questions to ask you. And this question I would normally ask an artist who I'm interviewing, usually at the beginning. But I think it's after what you've just said, it'd be great to ask at this particular point. For a person who has been more successful than many other black practitioners in terms of a power base and being and programming in British regional theatre, what would you say to somebody, a young girl, a young black girl? You know, it could have been yourself, maybe, you know, 15, 20 years ago. What would you say to them now, coming into British theatre?
About what? Just
should you do it?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Oh, I'd say absolutely do it. Do it and be passionate and fearless and go for it. Because I think I don't regret at all coming into this profession. You know, I'm still very passionate about it and enthusiastic about it. And I think that you don't hit. I didn't feel the impact of race on my working life until I got to a certain point in my career, and that's when it changes, you know?
What was the point?
I think when you want more power, when you want more power and you want to have the possibility of changing other people's entrance into the profession, or you want to, you are in charge of choosing what people see, then it changes. When you have more power, then it changes. And that's with anything. So I would say absolutely to any young person, do it, because I hope that some 15-year-old girl who's starting out now is absolutely going to overtake me. You know, just like, you know, I thank those people that have been before me, those women and men who have been before me and have made it possible for me to be sitting in West Yorkshire Playhouse going, I'm opening the show this week. So, you know, each generation makes a bit of a further knock. So I hope I would never discourage anyone from doing it, because I think if you're passionate about it, do it. Anything I think I'd say to them is, if you want to make money, this is not the profession to do it in. This is not the profession to do it in. If you want to make money, you really have to do it because you love it. And if you're really, really lucky, then you get to make loads of money. But that's not going to be the driver for getting into the game, I think.
Karina Johnson, thank you very much for being on Black Voices. I know you are itching to get back to the rehearsal room because you have a press night tonight, and I've been a little bit unfair keeping you here. But, you know, you've got so many good things to say, and, you know, we are so interested in what you've got to say, because there's not many people like you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.